I got kidnapped, and it happened in Colombia. Now, Colombia is notorious for kidnappings for ransom. But something like this, a kidnapping, was bound to happen to me. Because by the time that I got to Colombia, I counted this country as country number 40, with a bit of arrogance. And as I packed my backpack on that specific Saturday, I was very confident that everything would go well. I knew everything. I dressed down. I did not wear any jewelry. I hardly wear any money on me. I have one credit card hidden. I took water. I took food. I took the hotel taxi to a place where I could do some good photography. And yet, Carlos kidnapped me in Cartagena in broad daylight. And all of this is my fault, because I had become a little arrogant. When I decided to travel to Colombia, my friends and my family begged me not to go, and they said, this is a dangerous place because of, and they made that long list. Drug cartels, civil unrest, kidnappings, demonstrations, bombings, wars on three different borders, some terrorist groups, and this one's quite important because this became a problem. Anti-government guerrilla groups, such as the ELN, the Liberation Army. I went to Colombia anyway, but I was well prepared. I'd been to dangerous places before, and I was sure that I would be safe. We arrived in the city of Bogota, the capital city, and then after that we traveled to Cartagena and Medellin. It was in Cartagena that my trouble started. In this beautiful city, in Cartagena, on the Caribbean coast, with its beautiful, colorful buildings, and it's a photographer's dream, I stayed 2 days longer than I should have. And then Carlos kidnapped me, and he held me captive in his car. I want to blame Carlos, and I want to blame myself, but more than anything, I want to blame that ELN, that Liberation Army, because it was because of them that I stayed in Cartagena for some extra days on February the 15th on a Saturday, the day Carlos took me. I also broke 4 of my travel rules, simply because I had become a little arrogant and because I became very tired. Whenever I travel on my own as a woman, these are the laws that I go by. I made them. So first of all, women do not walk alone in non-tourist neighborhoods, where it's obvious that they are alone and where they can get lost. But on this Saturday, I did. I wandered off taking pictures and more until I was completely lost. Law number 2. If you travel alone as a solo woman, you do not take a random taxi in a side street back to your hotel. Never. The doorman at this hotel, Roberto, he said, never ever. Go into any store and ask them to contact the hotel, and he, Roberto, would send transport. And I, of course, said, yes, Roberto, of course, Roberto, and I promised. But I broke my promise, and I got into a random taxi. Law number 3. Tourists in complicated countries, they need to carry cell phones. I didn't. Law number 4. While I was alone in Cartagena, I needed the phone numbers of my hotel, my husband, the police, and I did not. I broke all 4 of these laws within minutes of one another, and therefore Carlos kidnapped me in Cartagena. Now, this was my fault. Yes, I broke those laws, but I will and I must blame those guerrilla fighters, the ELN. Because I was not supposed to be in Cartagena on this specific moment on that Saturday in February. We had planned a day trip to a pink lake 2 hours away. But remember that warning that my friends and my family gave me about not going to Colombia because there were guerrilla fighters? That became a reality. Now, that was not a funny giggle. That was a nervous giggle, because as I sit here, I can't believe that I actually got into Carlos's car. But I'm going to make a summary of the true events that happened before I did this very, very silly thing. Now, the ELN is the National Liberation Army of Colombia. I did not know that they existed before I went into this country. They're a guerrilla group, revolutionary, left-winged, and an armed group. Ejército de Liberación Nacional, that stands for ELN, and they're a communist group, and they've been in Colombia, and they've been active since 1964. They're good guerrillas. They're classified as dangerous terrorists, and again, that nervous laughter, because if I say that now, I worry. I worry about me on that day. But on that day, in Cartagena, I didn't, because of course by then I just knew of them, not that they would complicate my life and that it would end up where I got kidnapped. Again, the nervous laughter. So if we talk about the ELN, we have to worry about them. If you Colombian, you stay out of their way. And if you're a tourist, you run, because they make war. They kill people. They blow up things. I arrived in Cartagena on Monday, February the 10th. My travel plans for that Saturday was to go to the Pink Sea near Cartagena, and it's a salt mine, and I'm a photographer, so a pink lake, oh yes. But this didn't happen, because this guerrilla group, the ELN, they said no. On Valentine's Day, on February 14th, they would start a three-day nationwide armed strike. They would paralyze the entire country by restricting movement of vehicles and people. Now, in Colombia, the military was placed on maximum alert. Again, the nervous laughter, because I worried then. The Canadian government sent me an email to say, avoid all travel, not non-essential, all travel. Because the ELN shot people on these roads and they planted bombs. So we cancelled that trip to the Pink Sea. I have to admit that I was filled with sheer panic when a bomb exploded in a power station in Medellin, and this would be our next stop. I'm going to be honest, I was very worried, and I don't do terrorists or guerrilla fighters. So, nope, no traveling, another day in Cartagena. My husband would stay at the hotel by the pool because Cartagena is blazing hot and it's humid. I would do more photography. For the first time in Colombia on my own. So this was my first solo trip. I left very early carrying only a backpack, but I added water and food as I always do. Inside this backpack, I had my very expensive Canon 7D camera with a long lens, and it's always hidden until I feel safe enough to take it out. I wore no jewelry, old clothes, old shoes. And I went to this one district called Getsemani. Roberto, the hotel doorman, had a taxi deliver me straight into the street, and he said to phone him after my photography session from the Blue Cafe. And again, I promised that I would, but I didn't. The reason why I went to this specific spot is because they have a whole roof, a canopy of umbrellas in three directions hanging from between the buildings. It's just gorgeous. These colorful umbrellas make a little rooftop. Perfect for photography in the sunshine. Cobblestone roads and graffiti against the walls and just authentic Cartagena. A little out of the tourist trap part. So I took pictures and I wandered off, and another street and another left turn, following graffiti, and I walked and I took pictures and I drank water, and then I was lost. I got lost because I walked and walked looking through a camera lens, and I walked very far for very long. I had no map, no phone, limited Spanish. And just all of a sudden, there was a weird neighborhood. Street people lying on cardboard boxes and beggars. People started staring at me. There were filthy dumpsters with people climbing inside to retrieve something to eat. Everything screamed danger. It was time to go home. I realized that I had no food, no water, and that I was exhausted. I was so angry at myself, so terribly angry, because I never do this. I'm quite cautious. And then I was angry at that terrorist group for having a mini war in Colombia while I visited. Again, the nervous laughter. I really worried about them. So I have to tell the truth here. I stayed too long. I was so tired and it was so hot. And my instinct just said, this is a dangerous neighborhood. Go. I saw a taxi on the street corner and I gave my hotel name. And the driver said, "Sí, señora." And I didn't quite see his face because the light was so bright outside. In that moment, bad instant decision, because I got in. Now, about this taxi, and of course this is hindsight, the one door on the back at the passenger side couldn't open. This car had been in a mini crash, so there was a massive dent. I ran around and I got into the car from the driver's side and I just scooted over. The moment that door closed, the car started moving and he drove way too fast. He turned left and then right, and within three blocks, I wanted to get out. I found the little card with the hotel address on it and I gave it to the driver. And again, he said, "Sí, señora," and he took this card and he put it into his pocket and he just kept on driving and he went faster. He completely ignored me and then he turned on the radio. Hola, señora, I said, and I faked friendly and relaxed, and I leaned in and I went closer to him and I said, "Mi nombre es Audrey, I'm Audrey." And again, "Hola, señor," and then he said something that I couldn't hear, and I leaned in and I said again, "Hola, señor," and immediately after that, he switched off the radio. The silence came suddenly, and he said, "Carlos, mucho gusto, señora. Nice to meet you. ¿Hablas inglés?" I said, "Do you speak English?" Oh, I so hope he did. "Nada." And he looked rather pleased. None. He didn't speak any. Now, my Spanish is good enough to do idle chatter, but Spanish-speaking people have accents. And I have a South African accent. So tricky talking, a struggle. I use body language. Carlos suddenly babbled. It was just a rush of rapid Spanish. I stopped him and I begged him and I said, "Please speak to me like you speak to a baby. Small words, single words, verbs, don't conjugate them." He tried again and he said the same thing over and over again until I could understand what he was saying. "¿Por qué estás sola, señora?" "Why are you alone?" "No, no, 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 no. Why are you alone?" And what I did then, I told him the truth. Of all things I did, I told him the truth. I said my husband was tired and he was at the hotel and I was a photographer and that I had walked to take pictures of beautiful Colombia to send to my family in South Africa and to all of my friends in Canada. And now I'm babbling, but I said this in slow baby Spanish. At some point during this story of my life, he stopped me and he said, "You from Africa? Why are you white?" And I explained that there are white people in South Africa, lots of us. And he nodded, but it seemed as if he didn't quite believe me. Carlos was a little older, maybe 60, bald. His taxi was shabby, really shabby. It had no air conditioning. It had a crack in the front window, that broken car crashed door, and the one side mirror was missing. As I told Carlos my life story, he nodded, and I started to relax a little bit. The next moment, he made this sudden, so terribly dangerous U-turn. He just turned in front of all the cars and swerved, and all the cars honked, and they screamed at him, and we nearly crashed. And with that U-turn, I knew that he was going into the wrong direction. He was going towards the ocean, not towards my hotel, and I panicked. Seconds later, he pulled off the road just as suddenly as he made that U-turn, and he stopped. He stopped so suddenly that I bumped my head, and then he turned around and he looked at me and he said, "La verdad, the truth, tú eres hermosa." No, you're pretty, is what he said. And I want to just say, run, Audrey, run. Not that. I took a deep breath of all things he's saying, you're pretty. So again, that nervous little giggle. So it was almost a fearful little squeal. And then I realized, no, it wasn't. It was a giggle. I was truly amused. Now, just to picture the situation, we were at a deserted gas station out of Cartagena. This lonely yellow taxi standing there, I at the back seat with a door that couldn't open, and then Carlos who turned around saying that I'm pretty. And I'm giggling. But I have to explain why. Because when this man turned around, he had these bushy eyebrows, and those eyebrows talked and they played. So they moved. They moved up and down, and then they went flat, and then they went round, and then they moved independently. So his eyebrows played with me, and I didn't know if I had to run or laugh. And then with his gestures and his whole body, his eyebrows said, meet the Colombian Carlos. Meet the man who's captured you in his car. And his next sentence was, tell me about yourself. Who are you? Yo pienso, he said, I think you're interesting and a very special person. Now, in the case of non-tired people, they, especially women, they would say, no, I don't care if you think I'm interesting or special. I want you to take me back to my hotel now. And I could get out the other door and grab my backpack and run, but I didn't. In my best possible slow Spanish, I told the man called Carlos everything about me. I told him about my love and my passion for travel and for adventure and for new cultures. The words in Spanish say me gusta, I like. So I told him that me gusta fotografía, I like photography and I like storytelling and I do podcasts and I make travel stories. Carlos smiled and he nodded and those busy eyebrows marveled at my life story. Born in South Africa, white, 4 children grown, I immigrated to Canada, blah, 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 the whole Audrey stories. He patiently listened until I stopped speaking. And then he said something in Spanish that I did not understand. I had to ask him 3 times to repeat what he said. And this is what he wanted to know. He said, do you have 20 minutes extra? I said, yes. And why that yes? I think it's because that adventurer living in me said, this might be fun. It could end well. Let's just do it. And so I said, sí, señor. And I smiled. And Carlos made his eyebrows hop again, up and down and sideways, in and round and flat. And then he laughed. I like you, he said. And then he raced off. This time he really went away from Cartagena into a side road. We drove parallel with the ocean into a rural area. The windows were down and the wind was making it impossible to talk. We drove towards that pink sea that I never saw. We drove towards that mini war that I didn't want to go to. And today I have to ask if I was afraid, as he slowed down on a dirt road where I knew I should not be. Yes. But where would I go if I could get out of that car? By then it was too late. After a little while, his silence actually bothered me. He drove slower and slower, and again panic set in. Abruptly, he said, and he turned around while he drove, and he said, tu esposo, your husband. And I said, yes. And Carlos had to say these following words 3 times before I understood them again. He said, I really like you. You're really pretty. And it made me anxious again. And he said, will your husband be angry because I say this to you, because I say that I like you? And I said, no. But I didn't say, I said, no, he wouldn't be angry about those words, but he would be furious about the fact that I'm here alone with you in a village outside of Cartagena, away from the walled city and away from the tourist strip. But I didn't say that because I didn't know enough Spanish to explain all of those words. So I ended up by saying, no, Carlos, and I smiled, giving him permission to like me. Carlos smiled and he made his eyebrows hop again and he said, mi barrio, my neighborhood. He yelled out the window and somebody brought two sealed bottles of water. It was great to have water. Then we drove up and down the streets where his people were. He asked me to show my big Canon 7D. Now, I didn't know that he knew that I had this in my backpack, but he knew. So I took out this big camera and I held it out the window. So here we have Audrey on display, half hanging out the window, waving with my large camera as a showpiece to complete this picture that Carlos wanted to paint. The picture said, "I, Carlos, captured a tourist. Come on out, everybody, take a look. I have a white African in my car." That was the major thing, the fact that I was white and African. After a while, Carlos stopped. A woman gave me a massive lime green bucket filled with water, and she told me to put it on the floor, so I put it between my legs. Next came flowers, three bunches of beautiful tropical flowers for the bucket, and then Carlos drove over this bumpy road, and my feet got so wet from the water spilling over the bucket. He kept on driving towards the beach, and at the beach he stopped. People surrounded the car simply to look at me, and then they passed four small children, all dripping wet, through the windows. And this beautiful bright-colored blanket covered in gray sand, and they put this on the back seat to protect the seat from the dripping children, but the sand was just all over the car. The kids squealed and laughed and giggled. After we got the kids, Carlos drove and he gathered and he picked things up, and this taxi became a delivery truck. And of course, that Audrey display vehicle, he still showed me off to everybody in town. So after the bucket and the flowers and the four children, we received a bag of avocados, ripe, and then a stack pile of straw hats, the ones that the vendors sold for tourists in the middle of Cartagena. And somebody gave us a rusted birdcage with two bright yellow songbirds, and they kept on chirping without stopping. So the birds chirped, the kids babbled, and the water kept on spilling on my feet. Carlos drove onto a sidewalk to get as close to the shop as he possibly could, and he bought ice cream from his window. Pink ice cream for me and for him and for the children. The cutest little girl climbed onto my lap, and she offered me a lick of her ice cream, and I licked. Two of the kids called Carlos abuelo, that means grandfather, and two of them called him Tio, which is uncle. They were just delightful little things. And this little girl on my lap, so cute. And that sticky pink ice cream glued us together, and she held my hand. Now, kids are the most wonderful little things. They ignored me. I was still hanging out the window waving at people, but they babbled and they chatted to Carlos. Each of them told their own story like little kids did. And he nodded and he smiled, and then he entertained them with those dancing eyebrows. It was so noisy. The old rattling car and those chirping birds and the enthusiastic chatter of those children, all of that became a song, a revolutionary song that said, "We're Colombian. We're eating pink ice cream. We've kidnapped a white African woman. It's just a normal day." We kept on driving and Carlos did his deliveries. An hour later, Carlos and I had done everything that he should have. We'd taken four children home to their waiting mothers. We'd given the birds to a very old woman who sat in this plastic chair on a corner, and she wore the brightest of orange runners, way too big for her. The moment we gave her the birds, she started singing with them. It was cute. It was a little off tune, but very cute. Then we drove off to deliver the avocados, and we gave them to somebody at a small hotel, and they paid Carlos. The hats were given to a young man on a motorcycle, and he made that same dangerous U-turn again in front of all the cars, and then he raced off. The flowers went to a restaurant on the banks of a lagoon, and everybody knew Carlos there, and they gave him a little container with food in it, I think his dinner for the night, or just maybe something that he would eat later on. Just before Carlos gave away the flowers, He took out a massive pocket knife out of his front pocket and he cut two flowers off. And I'm so grateful that I didn't see that knife before. But anyway, he cut two flowers and then gave the bunch of flowers to this restaurant. After a very long time, we arrived at my hotel. There, Carlos jumped gallantly out of the car and he opened the door for me. He gave me one ripe avocado and one red flower and one orange flower, those beautiful tropical flowers. "Thank you for this very special day and for coming with me," he said. And then he leaned in and he gave me a light kiss on my cheek, like they do over there with friends. And then of all things, I didn't want to go yet. I threw my arms around him and I gave him a hug. And my arms were very, very pink and very sticky from that ice cream, and chunks of sea sand fell out of my shorts. And my shoes were slopping wet. They dripped. They made funny noises, squeaky noises. I held Carlos for a very long time, longer than needed. We just stood there in Cartagena under that blazing hot sun. "Thank you, Carlos," I said. "Thank you for showing me your town." We said farewell and I didn't want him to go and he didn't want to leave. He waited outside his taxi until I reached the front door of the hotel. I turned around and I waved and then he blew me a kiss and again I giggled. Now Roberto, the doorman, oh my goodness, the one who warned me to phone for a taxi and to get hotel transport, he stood at that hotel in his uniform and I was almost too afraid to go closer. But as I got closer, he smiled. And then Roberto waved at Carlos and he winked. And he said, "Ah, señora, welcome to Colombia." And he said it in that way that we address a child when they finally get it right. "Welcome to Colombia, the real Colombia." And in his eyes, he actually said, "Thank you for going with Carlos." This is the true story of a successful kidnapping for ransom in Colombia. The ransom was paid in full. The price to set me free? The price was this story of pink dripping ice cream, of yellow songbirds singing and then their owners singing with them, of a mini war by a guerrilla group, of one ripe avocado and two tropical flowers, one red one and one orange one. The ransom was this story about a man in Colombia called Carlos. He matters in my life.